Alright, I'm starting. Testing. Alright. Now I'm gonna get phone audio.
Well, let's just take like 1 minute and then go back and look at all of it and make sure it's what you want. And you know how to save and everything?
Yep. It saves automatically. Where's the... Hold on.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Oh, you're recording right now, Alex.
I am. I'm.
I'm
gonna edit this down. All right.
Do you use testing. Audacity or something?
Phone's gonna be backup audio, so that's just there.
Okay.
All right. So you can sync it up if I have to.
Sync it up to video.
We'll sync the audios up with each other.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because they didn't start at the exact same.
Here's two claps. You should see those spikes on the audio if you look at it.
All right. Okay. I want to go over Eric's family history.
Is it recording right now?
It is recording, yeah.
I don't see any square or anything. I need some feedback.
Well, see, that moves up and down.
Gotcha.
Okay, starting over.
So, let's start with the date.
It is...
July.
July 2nd.
2019. Let's go with that.
At 9:37 p.m. in Tyler, Texas, at the home of my dad, Roger Ray Eric. Interviewed by his son, Alex Eric. So, this first one I wanted to talk about Eric family history, because you are the keeper of all of the knowledge. You and Randy.
You could call me the Oracle.
So, where did the Erics come from, and how do we know that they came from there?
Well, my dad, Leonard William Eric, spent most of his life, large part of his adult life, trying to figure out where we Erics came from, because all we knew was his father, which is Leonard L. Eric, and his grandfather, John Riley Eric, was as far back as he could go. They knew that John Riley Eric came from Tennessee, but didn't know anything beyond that. He did most of his research before online census records were available and easily searchable. So dad died in 99, never really knowing where Eric's came from. So in about 2006 or 7, I started doing more research and got a subscription to Ancestry.com and did the census and all that stuff. And I finally figured out that we are Orics from Warren County, Tennessee, O-R-R-I-C-K. But they pronounced the name Ark. They pronounced Oric as Ark, A-R-K. In fact, in some school records and other things in Tennessee, the school kids are actually listed as Ark because that's how they pronounced it. And was more important back then how you pronounced something than how you spelled it. Which, that was a lot of stuff to learn, not knowing anything about genealogy. You know, you start caring about how things are spelled and you realize, well, they didn't even care back then. They just cared how you pronounced it. So that's before John Riley Eric. His father was John Oric, and John Oric was shot at the Battle of Shiloh.
And did you discover that gap between them?
Well, Randy and I went to the Dallas Library one year, maybe it was around 2008 or 9, I don't remember when, but we found the military records for John Oric, and it explained a lot of things. He was shot at Shiloh, the Battle of Shiloh. and they carried him off to Corinth when they were retreating from the incoming troops. And he died in Corinth, and we don't know his burial. He was probably buried in a shallow grave in Corinth, Mississippi. So we don't know where he's buried. And he died at the age of about 35. That was in 1862, April. So what really put this all together is I hired a lady to go dig up the military records, which included, actually not the military records, but the pension application of John Orrick's widow, which would be my third great-grandmother. And her name was Margaret Eric or Orrick. And what happened was after her husband was shot at Shiloh and killed, leaving her with seven kids, the youngest of which was John Riley, she remarried to a guy named William B. Nunley in Grundy County in 1867. And he fought for the Union side, and she got his pension when he died. And to get his pension, she had to produce a bunch of pension documents, and she was turned down a few times. But in those pension documents, she had to explain that she didn't know how to spell the Eric name, the Orrick name. And so she used the spelling Eric, which was sort of a combination of Orrick and Ark, like she pronounced it. So it ended up being A-R-R-I-C-K. In the 1870 Grundy census, she's listed as Peggy Ark, and it's spelled A-R-K-E at that point. In the 1880 census, she's in Coffee County, even though she didn't move, but the county line moved. And she's there as Margaret Eric, A-R-R-I-C-K. And Peggy is a shortcut for Margaret. So 1870 was a bad time for that part of the country, basically under martial law after the war. And the census is terrible in 1870. 1880, it's much better. And of course, the 1890 census was burned, so we don't have that. We miss a lot of details. But basically, this pension application was the mother lode for our family because it explained the name change from Orrick to Eric. And it explained a little bit about, well, explained a lot about how John Orrick died, because one of the affidavits is from a guy named Manly Wilson who fought with John Orrick. And he was in, I guess, a foxhole or whatever you call it, in a trench at the Battle of Shiloh, next to John Orrick when he was shot in the chest. And he actually gives an eyewitness description of the shooting of John Orrick at the Battle of Shiloh in 1862. So, I mean, we feel really lucky having, we're one of the few families out of the 620 some odd thousand people who were killed in the Civil War to have an eyewitness account of the shooting of our, as tragic as it is, of the shooting of our third great grandfather. It changed the course of our entire family. It changed our name. It changed everything. His widow, Margaret, who married William B. Nunley, she had a child with him, but she used the Eric name forever. She didn't use the Nunley name, and we don't really know that why that is. And even her daughter from William B. Nunley was named Fanny, and even Fanny went by the Eric name. She refused to use the Nunley name. I'm not sure what all that was about, but they were legitimately married, and he lived until 1889. And in typical Orrick fashion, we do not know where Margaret Orrick Nunley is buried. It's really weird. The last indication we know of her is there is a pension payment made to her in 1906, and she lives in Stick, Tennessee. And Stick, Tennessee, there used to be a post office there. There hasn't been for 100 years. And it's a little place with just a couple of houses. It's not even there on the map anymore, but I know about where it is. It's near her, where her daughter was married to a Cornelison, near Manchester, Tennessee, which is in Coffee County.
So when did the Eric's move from Tennessee to Texas?
Well, John John Riley Eric, who is my great grandfather, he moved to Hardin County, Tennessee, which is sort of going west from Warren County, Tennessee after the war. And he married a Harrison girl there, Minerva Viola Harrison, in 1884. And we have a tintype picture of him. There's a long story behind the tintype, which is a great story, but the Strickland family has it. And it's now in our possession now. If I ever die, you need to go find the tintype, which is in my genealogy files, because it's the only picture of John Riley Eric.
The original. You have the original.
We have the original. And it was taken at the Kindle store. And there's some fairly new information within the last couple of years. We found out that John Riley, when he was in Coffee County as a young man, a warrant was put out for his arrest for carrying guns in public. And apparently in the cities, they didn't want you to carry, open carry your pistols, and he did. And so a warrant was put out for his arrest, and he fled the county. I think he went to Hardin County, which is a couple counties. This is John Riley. And my grandfather, your great-grandfather.
You think he fled over a warrant?
And he fled over a warrant. And he went to Hardin County, and he married a Harrison girl there. And then he went immediately after that, I believe, to Kaufman County, Texas. I think he was sort of on the run. And I think the Harrison family thought that these Eric boys, because his brother was near there too, were sort of hoodlums. And I don't think the family approved of John Riley Eric, although we have no other evidence that he was in any way a hoodlum. When they moved to Kaufman County, Texas, he farmed there until he died in 1906. It's kind of weird because if you look at a lot of our family, a lot of people died in 1906, or plus or minus a year there. His brother did, his mom did. Mom died in 1906. And in typical Eric fashion, John Riley Eric's grave is to this day unfound. He was probably buried somewhere in Kaufman County. We think there's a good chance he was buried at Blackland Cemetery. And the reason for that is because we have one newspaper snippet from 1892 where it says, "Daughter of John Ark died and was buried at Blackland Cemetery." In fact, I think it says infant daughter of John Ark, and it's spelled A-R-K. So to me, that sounds like someone was just writing down what someone said, and they pronounced it Ark, and then they wrote down A-R-K. But there's no other Ark family. This was John Eric. So his infant daughter died early in 1892.
The newspaper clipping said the daughter was buried there.
Yeah.
And so he would be buried close to
Yeah, we're thinking that he could be, although it was 1906 when he died, so that was...
newspaper clipping was from when?
1892.
Okay.
And if you look in the 1900 census, that's the first census that shows how many children that the moms had and how many were still alive. And in that census, Minerva is shown as having five children, and four of them are alive. So that corroborates the story that they had an infant that died in 1892. So there's a good chance that he's buried at Blackland Cemetery. But I've been through there. Randy's been through there a lot. It's full of poison ivy. It's right next to a road. And my thoughts are that the road actually goes over part of it, because it's not parallel to the road. The road goes sort of at an angle. And my thought is John Riley is in there somewhere. But I've poked around, and I know that beyond the fence lines, I have seen markers. So there's no telling. It's a fairly unkept cemetery, but it's in Kaufman County, and if you go, you can look it up, Blackland Cemetery. Now, there's two Blackland cemeteries. One's up in, I think, Rowlett County or near Rowlett. But this one is in Kaufman. It's just south of I-20. If you're going to Dallas and you go past Bucky's, if you hang a left there and go down some roads, you can run into Blackland Cemetery and you can walk it. There's a sign. and it's a well-known place.
We went there one time. I think you took me there, and we just walked outside.
Yeah.
It was very overgrown.
Yeah, it's every once in a while it gets cleaned out all the way down to the ground, and you can walk it pretty good. There's nobody else there that we know of, with the small exception of the Cash family that might have come from Tennessee, but other than that, we don't know. So we don't know where John Riley Eric is buried. We don't know where his father is buried, probably in Corinth, Mississippi. We don't know where his mother is buried, probably in Grundy or Coffee County, Tennessee. And the generations before John Riley, the Oricks, were in Warren County, Tennessee, and they were on what I call the Orick Farm, which is south of Centertown, Tennessee, which is in Warren County. And there's a farm there. It's 75 acres now. It used to be 125 acres. But the Oricks had their own cemetery or graveyard. And if you look at the old deeds in about 1860, there's actually a deed that talks about the graveyard being 5 poles by 5 poles, which is 80 foot by 80 foot. So it's a pretty big graveyard. I can account for maybe 20 to 50 people who are missing who could be buried in the Oric Cemetery. And the Oric Cemetery, you know, it was sold and bought throughout the years. And in the 1950s, it was owned by Thomas Oliver Brewer. And there was an old cemetery on his property, the Oric Cemetery. It was overgrown. He tried to get someone to come out and survey it for him, and that never happened. And he got old, and he plowed under the entire cemetery. Part of the stories that have come down from some of the people who have researched that says there were giant rocks there that his plows ran into, and he dug these rocks up and he threw them off to the side, and that he put the tombstones or the headstones in a cistern. So if you go back there today, and I've been back there, it's now owned by Danny Hullett, and it's a 75-acre farm. There's a modern house there. And I took radar out there in 2010, and we scanned it, and sure enough found a place where the graves were that matches up where William Brewer says that the graveyard used to be.
Okay, so what kind of document did you actually find that said, with this story, that he plowed it under?
Okay, that information is from a researcher that I don't know. It's from an Oric researcher back in maybe the 60s or the 70s, who was looking for the Orics and ended up at the farm correctly and knocked on the door, and they said, yeah, there used to be a cemetery here, but I plowed it under. And there was a bunch of stones, and I pushed the stones off to the side and pushed them into the cistern. And so that's the story that has been handed down that I've gotten from old researchers who are long since gone. And so if you go out there now, what's interesting, you can drive around the house, and around the house, on the corners of the house, are these giant stones. They could be cornerstones to like a big building, like maybe a church. I believe there was a church there, and I believe John Riley's grandfather, Allen Oric, A-L-L-E-N, I believe he ran the church. I don't have any information to prove that, but when Allen Oric died around 1850, immediately the Big Springs Church was started up. And I think that was out of the necessity of the fact that the old church had gone, or Allen had died, or maybe the church burnt, who knows? I mean, this was 1850, so there's not a lot of documentation. In fact, 1850 is the first census where all the family members are even mentioned. But his widow, Allen Oric's widow, which is be my third great grandparents, his widow was Martha Hardin. They came from Kentucky in the 1820s. And she lived all the way up to about 1900, so she would have been very close to 100 years old, but she didn't make the 1900 census. But in the 1860s, there is a deed that she sold a large portion of the farm to her daughter, Salethea, and that's where that deed is where the graveyard of Five Poles Square is mentioned. So that's a pretty good piece of Orc history right there. There was definitely a graveyard there, and it was in a deed. But that graveyard is missing now, and there's a modern house there. But the owners know me, and they know there's a graveyard there. They were there when I pulled the radar across it. And that was in 2010.
And so what did you find with the radar?
I hired a professor from the University of Knoxville to bring his radar.
You didn't exactly hire him. What happened?
Well, you know, I got him interested in the project, and he agreed if I would make a donation to his department of $1,000, and I did gladly. And he brought the radar out. We really only spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours out there. And what I have is pictures of the screen from his computer that show the humps. And when you drag radar, what happens is when you dig a grave, the density of the soil changes and you kind of end up with little dome shape images. And I have those. Now, of course, I don't know who these are. It could be Alan Orrick and his wife, Martha. It could be their parents, which would be Lewis Orrick and Elizabeth Meredith. And there's tons of kids and spouses that could be buried there. So there's...
Is there an indication of how many graves there were?
No. The actual best preserved part, the best preserved graves we found were actually over the gravel road that goes to the back of the house. So maybe in a way the road kind of protected that part.
But how many people do you think could have been buried there in a range?
Again, I think it could be 20 to 50 different people. I mean, it was a community graveyard, mostly for the Orrick family, but Alan and Martha Orrick had, I don't know, 7 to 10 children.
So in this time, we're talking about the Alan Orrick's time. This is pre-Civil War.
Right.
And this is a small town in Tennessee with farms.
Yeah.
And there's a church here. What's the population of this town? What's the name of this town at this point?
Well, the general area is probably would be called Daylight. It's kind of, if you look in the Southern Standard newspaper, there are little sections like Clearmont, and these are like little townships. They're not, they don't usually even have...
This is Coffee County?
This is Warren County.
Okay.
And it's south of Centertown. Centertown used to be called Glasscock, and George Glasscock lived there and owned a bunch of that land, and he had slaves, but the Orcs in that area didn't have slaves.
So Orcs generally did not have slaves.
No, you'd have to go all the way back to Maryland in the 1650s, 1700 time to get the rich Orcs, the lawyers and the doctors and politicians. A lot of them owned slaves. In fact, some of them are documented. Some of them were released during the war and they begged to come back because they lived in such great conditions. And so, yeah, some of those Orcs did. But the big story about the Orcs in the USA, an overview, would be this. The Orcs appear in Maryland around 1650 as James O'Rourke. But he quickly starts to use the spelling Orrick, O-R-R-I-C-K.
Is this to remove any Irishness?
No,
from his
I don't
name?
Really think so. I mean, I don't have any indication it's anything beyond just a simple spelling, and they don't care as much about every letter as we did. They care more about how it's spelled. But all indication, well, DNA proves that we are from O'Rourke's in Ireland. Now, that's not to say that James O'Rourke came from Ireland. He could have come from Orrock in Scotland. We don't know that yet. But around 1650, the Orcs came in. They married amongst the rich and famous, the Cromwells and the Pendletons and all these fancy people. And they were doctors and lawyers. They had a lot of money, and some of them owned property on Gibson Island. There's actually a J. Orrick Street on Gibson Island. If the old timers tell me, no, that's not Orrick, that's just a random word. No, he owned that property there, and that's where James Orrick lived. But anyway, around 1730, one of the lines of Orrick's split off and went south. Only one line. And they became almost all of the Orricks of the southern United States. Just that one line that went out around 1730 to 1750. This was Daniel Boone's era. This was the King's Highway down to the Carolinas and the Indian Wars. And so there is a missing generation or two between the rich and famous Orricks in Maryland around 1730 to 50, until they start appear in the Carolinas and the Kentuckys and Tennessee around 1800. So there's a couple of generations missing there. So because of DNA, I know they're connected. I can prove they're connected, but I don't have technically a family tree. Now there's someone online who has said, oh, we have an Orrick Bible, and it explains the gap, and the gap is filled up with a couple of Matthew Orricks. But this happened about 5 years before I got into genealogy on the internet, and I have spent 10 years trying to locate this Bible, and no one can find it, and they can't find the person who posted it. And the person who posted it, their email is an address to a virus.
Oh my gosh.
So it's some sort of, I believe it's probably true, but I'd kind of like to see this Bible and get it in my hand, but it explains the Orrick gap. And it's pretty detailed. It gives 2, 3, 4 generations of various people.
So you've seen scans.
Yes, I have a text and it's on my website. And you can look it up. Now, some people on Ancestry have taken that for the gospel and they've put it on there. So if you look on Ancestry and you look on public trees, you'll find these Orricks and you'll see, oh, well, it's fully connected all the way back to the Maryland Orricks. But on my tree, you will not find that because I stop at Lewis Orrick, who was born 1770 in South Carolina. I stop with him because I don't know for sure that his father is Matthew, because I don't find this Bible. But I'm hoping someday to wake up to an email to someone who says, yeah, my great-grandfather died and he left this bookshelf full of stuff and I looked this one up and I think this ought to go to you, and it proves the whole thing. But until that happens, I'm not inclined to fill out my tree like a lot of other people have.
How much focus have you, if you had given more focus to the Maryland part of the country, do you think you'd find this missing link somewhere?
No, because the small branch peeled off from the well-documented, well-connected, wealthy Orricks in Maryland. This one branch peeled off and went south and separated themselves. They became rather poor dirt farmers in the south, and they spent the next hundred years being farmers. And when I first got into it, I had the suspicion that we were connected to the Orricks, but the old-timey researchers told me, no, that can't be true. The old Orricks in Maryland, they're rich and famous, and we Orricks in the south, we're just poor dirt farmers with no teeth. But I thought they were the same people. And so when DNA testing came out, I was one of the early adopters, and I guess it was about 2007 or so, I set up a DNA study with Family Tree DNA, and I got DNA from about 15 different people. And one of them was from a well-known Orrick from the Maryland line, who's well-documented to the Maryland line. And he matches the Southern Orricks and us Erics, of course. So, I mean, that proves that we are indeed connected. And I think I want a steak dinner over that from one of the older. But,
there's another. I read that I Googled the Orrick name when I was a kid, and it said it was related to a French name, which was Herrick. So there are other Orricks in the United States that are not related to us, but it's spelled the same.
Okay. To my knowledge, no. I've not found a single, with DNA study or traditional documentation, I haven't found any other Erics or Auric spelling that aren't obviously related to us Erics. Now, there's some of us Erics that are from this one branch that got misspelled to Eric in 1862 through Margaret's line. Some of them use one R, A-R-I-C-K. And one of them does appear in Arkansas. This is William Frank Eric, A-R-I-C-K. And no one has ever known where he came from, but I found one of his descendants, Donald Eric, A-R-I-C-K. You can find them in Arkansas. And his DNA matches us very close. So I'm convinced he's one of Margaret's son. And he spelled his name A-R-I-C-K with just one R. But again, he is just part of our very small branch that got their name misspelled at the Civil War. The rest of the Aurics are spelled O-R-R-I-C-K, and there is a branch in Tennessee that's O-R-I-C-K, one R. So there's quite a few Aurics with one R that are connected to us Aurics.
Are Arcs still around?
I haven't found a solid connection to a family named Arc, and there are some families named Arc, A-R-K, or spelled Arc. I haven't found that their DNA matches, but you know, we're early in the DNA revolution, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if some Aurics or some Arcs show up in various spellings that are really Aurics. Because in Tennessee, when they moved south, a lot of those Tennesseans and Kentuckians and Alabamans and others, they pronounced the Auric name, they pronounced it Arc. And so it got spelled ARK in a lot of cases, A-R-K.
So when I was driving through San Francisco one time, I noticed the Auric Law Firm.
Mm-hmm.
Were they related to us?
Absolutely. You can trace those Aurics all the way back through famous lawyers who go all the way back to Supreme Court justices, and they go directly to the Maryland Aurics.
Do we have a Supreme Court justice relative?
William Horsley Auric, I believe, worked for John F. Kennedy, and he was part of the Patty Hearst trial, and they're mostly Democrats and have, you know, leaned left. How the migration works on some of those Aurics is they moved across the northern part of the United States. From Maryland, they went through Mississippi, Missouri, and they were politicians and lawyers and business owners in Missouri, and then they continued on to San Francisco. One of them was a paint manufacturer in San Francisco. And their lines are well documented, their families are well off, and their names are well known. You know, this is different than the Southern Aurics, because the Southern Aurics peeled off, and in a time where there wasn't good documentation, like in the mid and late 1700s, and a lot of those courthouses were burned in the war, and their family histories, a lot of them didn't survive very well. So the Northern Aurics are fairly well documented, and the Southern Aurics are not. A lot of the documentation for the Northern Aurics comes from a book written by Stella Pickett Hardy, who the name of the book is, I believe it's Families of the Southern United States, Southern Colonial Families, something like that, I forget, but it's a well-known book, you can find it. And she went to these Aurics and she asked them, "Where'd you come from?" And they said, "Well, we came from Scotland. We came from a place called Auroch, O-R-R-O-C-K, Scotland." And indeed, there's a place north of the Bay of Edinburgh in Scotland where there's a place called Auroch, and there's Auroch families there. But I have yet to get an Auroch participant in the DNA study, and I can't prove that they are O'Rourke's from Ireland. So I don't know the answer to that. I can't prove Stella Pickett Hardy's history that she got from Oryx in Maryland. It wouldn't surprise me if it was true, but what I know for sure is true is that our Oryx in the United States match DNA to O'Rourke's in Ireland. Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't go from Ireland over to Scotland for a few hundred years and then come to the United States from there. That's certainly possible. So her story could be true. It could be O'Rourke's and O'Rourke's in Ireland.
So are we descendants of Tiernan O'Rourke?
The answer to that is yes. I don't know exactly how. It goes back at least 1,000 years. And this is, of course, in the northern central part of Ireland. And I don't know a lot about that history.
His wife was kidnapped or something? There's some history.
Yeah, this is not history that I'm well acquainted with, but this is history that you can, that many smart people have documented, and it's part of Ireland history. And the O'Rourke's are, you know, an important family. They were rulers and despots, and so there's quite a bit of history there. It's a little bit outside my range. I've sort of focused on the American Oryx and trying to figure out, you know, mainly this big gap between the Maryland Oryx and the Southern Oryx is probably my main interest. I'd like to fill that gap, because if we did, it would connect about 350, 400 years of Oryx history. But I've never gone beyond the Maryland Oryx of 1650. I've never gone backwards to find out where did they come from? Where actually did James come from? You know, is there a document in Scotland or Ireland that explains why he left? Or somehow he's connected with these rich families, the Cromwells and the others. So they might have escaped. You know, there's a lot of history there that I don't know about. There's a lot of political upheaval in that area around that time.
Okay, I'm going to leave this on, and I'm going to check on the baby. Excuse me a second.
I'm going to scratch the microphone. The timestamp is 38:13:14:15:16. Breaker 19. Bidia, bidia, bidia. That's all, folks. The baby has stopped crying. It's a wonderful sound. Shh. She cried for 40 minutes.
Yeah. sit with us.
It's 40 minutes. You probably got to stop and just tack on and start a new one. Just for safety.
Okay, I'll stop.